John Batts with Colonel Jeff McCausland of CBS News. We go to NATO and the EU. There is not complete unanimity here because UK is not in EU, and it certainly is a dominant member in NATO. But in general, I speak of the European authorities' successes in these last days, that they have not fallen apart, despite the fact that winter is now biting. In the UK, families are asked to keep their sitting rooms at 18 degrees centigrade. If you translate that, that's cold. There are not adequate resources for next winter or the winter after for all of Europe. Great anxiety among the industrial base. However, we start with the praise of the EU and NATO holding together despite the threats, despite the war fighting in Ukraine, and even successfully negotiating an oil price cap on Russian seaborne oil that will considerably cut into Mr. Putin's ability to pay for his war. So, Jeff, can we begin by praising NATO and the EU for holding together?
Absolutely, John. And I think beyond that, I think even any objective observer here in the United States who supports this particular U.S. involvement and support of Ukraine would have to give the Biden administration pretty good marks on their ability to keep the alliance together. Don't forget, John, it was only, 14 months ago that you and I were talking about the withdrawal from Afghanistan, a rather ignominious moment in the history of U.S. foreign policy, and a NATO mission, oh, by the way, that went pretty badly. So NATO looked like it was totally in disarray, and I think that encouraged Mr. Putin. But here we are now 9 months into this conflict and still see NATO members of supporting this effort. We had a recent, in the last few days, meeting of foreign ministers in Bucharest, Romania, and they did two things. One, which was very stunning to me, was they reannounced once again their willingness to bring Ukraine into NATO and as a member at some time in future. And that's going to be a fairly long period of time. It will certainly be after this particular conflict was over. But I thought it was stunning that they would take this moment to announce that once again. And then secondly, of course, they announced their collective willingness to provide Ukraine the military hardware necessary to reverse this Russian aggression, particularly emphasizing at the moment, of course, air defense systems and also support for Ukraine's energy infrastructure. In the last day or so, I've also seen there's been the redirection of energy. Turkey actually working some effort to redirect energy through Moldova into Ukraine. So this is pretty significant that these 30 countries have stayed aligned even under the difficult situation you point out quite rightfully, John, and that is shrinking energy stocks and rising prices in Western Europe.
Yes, the natural gas reserves are full up or near to full up for this winter. But planning when you're the EU is the next 5 years, and there are no answers for 12 months from now or 24 months from now. We turn, however, to war fighting. The report came in, and I immediately corresponded with Jeff on it, that 800 significant war-fighting vehicles or units, this would be artillery, tanks, MRAPs, the weapons of war that have wheels or tracks, are now to be positioned or underway to be positioned in Poland. At the same time, news came in that elements of the 1st Division, the Big Red One, the storied division of the U.S. in the 20th century, elements are to be rotated into Poland, where there was already a core planning group, I believe. So, Jeff, this sounds like pre-positioning for the battle after the battle in Ukraine. Is that how to read this?
Exactly, John. And it's also that matter of deterrence of a Russian strike against those NATO partners and reassurance of those allies that the United States stands behind its NATO commitments. The physical presence of American soldiers, physical presence of large amounts of American hardware, certainly underscoring both those points. This harkens back to the Cold War. And in fact, John, oddly enough, I served in the 1st Division, an element of it in Europe, and we were part of the forward element for the rest of the division to arrive if, in fact, the Warsaw Pact and Soviet Union had attacked during the Cold War. We had several division sets of equipment pre-positioned in Europe during the Cold War. These were called POMCAs, pre-positioned overseas materiel configured in unit sets. The idea being to put an entire division set of equipment, tanks, APCs, artillery, et cetera, spare parts, ammo, pre-position that in Europe. So in time of crisis, all you had to really do was fly the people in. They could fall on the equipment and then move off into battle. And now, of course, we are redoing that, having drawn all that equipment out at the end of the Cold War. But interestingly enough, of course, positioning that now in Poland, which during the Cold War was, of course, a Warsaw Pact member, as it putting it as close to the battlefield and along the front line states of NATO, those bordering the Russian Federation. In addition, of course, we've had rotational units, rotational brigade up in the Baltic Sea, which I think is still there, as well as air elements that have been pre-positioned and rotated in and out of other countries in the region, Romania, Bulgaria, etc.
Angela Merkel, former chancellor of Germany, is quoted in the London press of having made remarks to Die Zeit, the big newspaper in Germany. The Cold War never really ended because Russia was basically not satisfied. Strikingly ironic that the new chancellor of Germany, Olaf Scholz, has published an essay on foreign affairs saying we mustn't permit countries to divide into blocks and have another Cold War. So there's a debate in Germany as to whether this is or is not the Cold War and whether we take the battlefronts again. And yet, Germany's announcing the purchase of F-35s. We have a couple of minutes, Colonel. What do the F-35s give to Germany? What capability that they do not now have?
Well, a couple of things. One is, of course, the F-35 is the most advanced counter-air fighter in the world right now. So in terms of counter-air strikes against enemy air forces, this is a whole leap in terms of technology. And also is commonality of aircraft across Europe, the F-35 now being the predominant fighter across Europe. But in addition to that, John, don't forget the United States maintains about 100 tactical nuclear weapons in Europe, positioned in five countries: Turkey, Germany, Italy, Belgium, and Holland. And those particular weapons are designed to be delivered on targets either by American Air Force or by NATO Air Force when those weapons are transferred over to those NATO units during time of crisis. Matching up that nuclear weapon with an F-35 makes it a more potent deterrent. The Russians complained about endlessly when I negotiated with them as we brought the F-35 forward because of its radar evasive technology, which allows a greater probability that it would penetrate Russian air defense and hit the target.
Where are the tactical nuclear weapons that NATO possesses, and how are they maintained?
100 of them roughly are here in the United States. The other 100, as I said, in Europe, in those five countries. Distribution in terms of numbers is classified. In Turkey, for sure, I would imagine they are at Incirlik Air Force Base, which is in southern Turkey. They are at other joint bases in Germany, Italy, Belgium, and Holland. And the way it's configured, John, is there will be an American custodial unit, they're there right now, who maintains control of the weapons stored in igloos on very highly secured weapon sites. There would be an associated allied air unit, which would have that mission.
We have Germany. 30 seconds, Jeff. Go ahead.
And what they would do would be trained for this mission. And then, as I said, the Americans would transfer the bombs to the Germans, Italians, Turks, or whatever, when they receive an appropriate authenticated message from Washington to do so in a crisis.
Colonel Jeff McCausland, United States Army retired, CBS News, a visiting professor at Dickinson College in the great Keystone State, and the CEO of Diamond Six Leadership and Strategy. I'm John Bash.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.